Monster Man, Episode 168, Cheetah to Cloaker. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're going to be continuing our journey through the C chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Before we do that, though, I have a new Patreon backer to thank. This is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. Patreon rewards include things like bonus content at the $1 level, a whole other podcast of bonus content, that's my show Patron Deities about deities and demigods, at the $2 level, and an option to pick a monster for an extra long special episode at the $5 level. So thank you very much to new subscriber Brian. Brian marks a first among my Patreon supporters. I think he is my first relative. So welcome, Brian. I got a lot of great reader feedback, both on my special episode on classic fantasy films, turns out a lot of Secret Krull fans out there, and also on the patron-only episode about Jeff Smith's comic epic Bone, including listener Rafe Ball pointing out that Bone is available on Comixology, the online digital comic service, for something like $20 US, which is like £13.99. And I'm kind of glad that I don't have a device that I can really read digital comics on. Otherwise, that might be what I do all day. Anyway, let's talk about the cheetah. I am amazed that the cheetah was not in an earlier monster manual, because cheetahs are very much one of those animals that young kids like, you know, because they have a simple fact about them, which is that they're the fastest land animal, and they look cool. And those are sort of two qualities that make for good zoo books animals, you know. They probably don't have zoo books anymore, I don't know. But when I was a kid, your younger children's classrooms were full of these lavishly illustrated books about animals that were in a series called Zoo Books. And I'm sure that there's some equivalent today, it's just that it's probably a YouTube channel. Anyway, cheetahs are great. They're cats, they're fast, it's fun. I mean, you know, cheetahs can be tamed apparently relatively easily. I mean, maybe not easily, but easily by the standards of big cats. So in parts of the medieval, and I believe also ancient and modern, Middle East and Mediterranean, you got this practice of hunting with cheetahs, people coursing with cheetahs like you might with hounds. And I think that if you have a ruler that you want to introduce as a sort of lavish and powerful person, having them hunting with the aid of a cheetah would be a really good way to do it, or indeed you could have it as sort of a companion to a ranger type. And it works really well because we all have clear ideas in our minds about what cheetahs are like and what they can do, which is why animal monsters work so well, because they basically do 99% of the work for you. A monster that doesn't do 99% of the work for you is our next entry, the Choke Creeper. The Choke Creeper is basically a creep choker. It's your standard strangly plant monster, distinguished from many of the other strangly plant monsters in Advanced Dungeons & Dragons by being as hard as a coffin nail. Choke Creeper has this particular thing where, like, you would normally expect fire to be the thing that you would use against plant monsters, but actually, things like vines and stuff don't really burn very well, and wood has to be dried out before it really will burn effectively, because it contains a lot of moisture. Things like forest fires tend to occur when the conditions are very dry, rather than just whenever. So actually, fire doesn't do all that much damage against the Choke Creeper, but it does more damage than most of the other things you can do to one. In fact, the best thing you can do to a Choke Creeper is focus all your attentions on getting your friend unchoked. You better hurry up, because it could kill you quite quickly. So since they have this kind of like woody main body, they're quite hard to damage, but on the other hand, probably since they move 5 feet around, relatively easy to escape. So once you know that the Choke Creeper is there, then you can get out of the way pretty quickly, as long as nobody's getting choked. Now, they're definitely more of a little bit like the Cave Moray, as I mentioned. They're more of a hazard monster than an encounter by themselves. And they make an excellent addition to the landscape of, a jungle or wilderness encounter. And you can definitely imagine some creature that is, for whatever reason, immune to the Choke Creeper, you know, maybe because it can be intangible or something like that, making its lair basically next to the Choke Creeper in order to protect its treasure or what have you. So I feel like the Choke Creeper is just a good kind of strangly vine sort of thing. It's the likelihood that it'll kill you is a bit weird, because it's not really related to how tough the character that it's killing is. So the rule is that basically it grabs onto you Every turn, there's a 10% chance that it'll try to strangle you, and if it does, at the end of the next turn, you die. Now, this does a fun thing, which is that it puts a ticking clock on the encounter, right? That the player characters know that they have only a certain amount of time to save their friend who's being strangled. That's really cool. But it just is yet another blow to the idea of how hit points are supposed to work, right? We all know that hit points are an abstraction representing luck and a character's sort of tactical sense and basically their ability to escape from death. But this is undermined by the fact that the system is constantly introducing all these things that kill you regardless of what your hit points are, which is to say your ability to avoid dying or sustain wounds or deadly situations that would kill a lesser person don't seem to apply to these specific types of attacks, which makes more sense if you think that hit points are a measure of bodily toughness. None of this makes any sense. Most of the time, I can ignore that. I feel like if I wanted a hazard plant, the yellow musk creeper is probably more interesting, but maybe that's just because I like pollen zombies. Then finally, we have the cloaker. Now, cloakers are one of those monsters that are familiar to generations of Dungeons & Dragons players, but not really to anybody who isn't one. A cloaker is like a big, not quite a manta ray looking thing, but, you know, like a sort of giant flatfish. I mean, it looks a bit like a cloak, only it's got a face on the inside. And it flaps along, attacks you, and wraps around you. The tactical challenge of the cloaker is that it's wrapped around your friend, right? So it's very hard for the character to get it off because, you know, their arms are pinned by their sides, and it's very hard for the other characters to get it off without hurting the character that it's wrapped around. It also has this ability to create a frightening moan, which can have a variety of different effects. Depending on the level of intensity, it might invoke fear, it might inflict penalties, it might even cause nausea or root you to the spot. I feel like the moaning ability might be a gimmick too far. I'd almost want to give that moaning ability to someone else. Frankly, that's a bit better than the wail that the Banshee has, which is like a death attack, which doesn't quite fit with the idea of what a Banshee does. So I might almost take this ability off the cloaker and stick it on the Banshee. But ultimately, I feel like the cloaker's description and its powers give this setup that it's maybe supposed to be a horror monster. But the illustration and the concept are so goofy that they kind of work against the idea that the cloaker might be horrifying. And this is definitely a case where the knowable monster manual format works against the monster being horrible, as is true with most horror-type monsters, right? That the cloaker, ultimately, once you know what it is and what it can do, it's a pretty tough opponent. I mean, it's certainly not a pushover. And so in that sense, it might be frightening, but it's not horrifying. You're not going to be horrified by the cloaker. It just that might be a case where the result is that the format of the presentation lets the monster down a little bit. I'm sure there's a way to make them work, but I think you might need to change them up just slightly to defeat the sense of, like, old-timey, gamey familiarity that these guys have that doesn't have any of the, like, familiarity and nostalgia that, say, a monster from myth or folklore does. Now, you'll have noticed that normally we use a two-monster format for these episodes, and lately I've had three. This is mainly just because some of these monsters are shorter than others, and I don't know how many we're going to fit into the next one. But we're certainly going to get started off in our next episode with the Kushi. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.